How many of you love all the letters? That's a great movie. If you haven't seen it, that's a funny, funny, funny movie. But so we've been talking about better decisions, fewer regrets over the last few weeks. You know, your decisions determine the direction and the quality of your life. You with me? Right? You make a bad decision, what happens to the quality of your life? Well, it depends on how impactful that decision is. The decisions you make determine the direction and the quality of your life. Life is more about what you choose to do than what happens to you. You with me? So many times, what happens to us, we want to blame that on all the things, but so many times you look back over your life, the thing that happened to you was because of the things you chose to do. Right? Like all of a sudden, you get a DWI. Right? How did this happen? I don't know, maybe you chose to drink a few years ago. Then you chose to drink a few more, and then you chose to drink a few more, and chose to drink. How is this happening to me? It's not happening to you, it's what you chose to do. You with me? Come on, wake up now. This is reality. Your life is more about what you choose to do than what happens to you. The little daily decisions lead you down a path to big life-altering decisions. They could be good decisions, or it could be regretful decisions. And so what we've been talking about is pre-deciding is the key to making better decisions with fewer regrets. Pre-decide our values. The values are those core beliefs deep inside of you. And many of us, myself included, maybe you're still there, I'm still working on them. Those core beliefs that we have deep inside of us are based on lies. Lies that we've been taught all our life. Like for me, my biggest lie is I don't just fail, I'm a failure. And so I had to learn and work through and realize that that's a lie straight from the pits of hell. And I had to allow God to teach me the truth of that. And so I had a new became to realize there's a new value in my life. And it's not that I'm a failure. I'm a child of the King. That makes me a prince. Whether you like it or not, I'm going to do princely things. There's a different value in my life based on what I believe deep inside of me. And so if you're believing lies right now, you need to have a checkup from the neck up about the values that you place on your life. Because what you believe in, Jesus says like this, from out of the heart flows man. What you believe deep inside is what's going to flow out of you. You want to figure that out, get in a frustrating, heated discussion somewhere. The real you comes out. You with me? Like, have one of them kids test you. Yep, you guys all know. Pre-decide personal limits and boundaries when it comes to your morals. You know, people made fun of Vice President Pence because he wouldn't get in a car, wouldn't be alone in a room with another woman. That's a great value to have. He pre-decided his morals. I'm not going to give up anything. As a pastor, we don't ever meet with a woman for a man. We don't ever meet with somebody of the opposite sex without somebody being in this building close to where we're meeting, and there's a window on that door. We don't ever want to have any indiscretion. We pre-decided that. Pre-decide your personal limits and your boundaries when it comes to personal standards, relational issues, financial matters. And how many of you seek help when it's too late? You with me? Like the number of people, I'm not picking on anybody in here, just in general, overall, ever since I've been doing this, people wait till the last second and say, can you help us with our marriage? No, there ain't no help for you. Y'all been at this for 20 years, and you think I'm going to fix this in 2 weeks? It's like they come with the divorce paperwork in hand and a checklist. I went to counseling. That didn't work. I tried, read this book. That didn't work. I did this. That didn't work. All right, last thing. Let me go see the pastor. That ain't going to work either. You know why it's not going to work? Because you pre-decided before that divorce was an option. If you pre-decide that divorce is an option, you're going to do everything in your power not to get a divorce. Not saying it's not going to happen because we live in evil with evil people around us, right? You might be married. Well, you are married to an evil person because it's an evil person that looks back at you in the mirror. You're like, I'm not evil. God said we all fall short of the glory of God. That makes us evil. Now, are we evil or do we do evil things? I don't know. You decide. Anyway, pre-decide my team of advisors to help run things before I make a decision so things don't go awry. Y'all remember. I'm proud. Y'all remember. You know, so many times, things go awry, and then we look for help. When you're in the midst of it, isn't the time to look for the team. Prior to that is the time you find a team of people, a team of experts. Somebody that's it's more financially suited than you. Somebody that's more business-minded than you. Somebody that's further along in the relationship than you. Somebody that's already got grandkids, so you know how to parent. You see, we don't know how to parent when we're parents, do we? We figure out how to parent when we got grandkids. Because we look back over the last 20 years and realize all the stupid things that we did, and we then take our grandkids and we do them different. And I used to get mad at my mom because she treated my kids differently than she treated me. Thank God she did. I wasn't smart enough to realize that. And what I want to instill in anybody that's going to listen is go to the grandparents and figure out how to parent, because they've done it a lot longer than you have. And they figured some things out. They figured out the battles. So get this team of advisors in place long before you need to make a decision. Predeciding is one key. Asking the right question is another key. And for you, it might be the most essential key. We ask the wrong question all the time. How many have ever asked, how fast can I go? Right? How fast can I go? I was in a meeting years ago in our community, and it was a police officer giving a presentation. It had nothing to do with the question that was about ready to be asked, and it's just amazing what people will focus on. But he gets done giving his presentation, and he says, "Is there any questions?" And what he really means is there any questions over what I've just spoke about? So an elderly gentleman raises his hand. I thought, oh, great, we're going to get a good question. No, we don't get a good question. He literally looks at this police officer and he says, how fast can I go? And the police officer looks at him like, what? What are you asking a question? But he says, well, how fast can I go before I get a ticket? Wrong question. Right up, Mr. Officer? Just so you want, if you want to know the answer to that question, it's 10 miles an hour. Because I believe they're told don't bring anybody into the courtroom unless they're over 10 miles an hour. Prepay, right? Because most people will prepay that ticket. But here's the reality of it. Do you want to lose money to something that you don't deserve to lose money to? You work hard for your money. Why are you going to give it away? Predecide now that you're going to do the speed limit. Don't ask how fast can I go? Or maybe you get this one. How close can I get to the line before I cross over the line? If this is the line, do I put my toe? Best Steve did this the first day and he fell over here. Do I put my toes right up here? And then you knocked over to wine community. You don't get close to the line. Pastor April will say, stay back from the front of the stage, Pastor Steve. Stop making a mess. And that's what happens when we ask the question, how close to the line can we go? We make a mess. We have a lot of regrets that come from that kind of thing. How far can I travel? If you're in the military, you understand this one. We have a boundary around our base that I don't know if they still have it. We used to have a boundary around the base that we could only go so far without being on leave. And then we'd have these knuckleheads go, how far can I go? Well, it says 350 miles or it says 300 miles. Well, I'll go 299. Yeah, you go 299 and then you have a breakdown, and then you got to have your car towed 400 miles away so you can get it fixed. Now you're over the line. You got no margin for error. How far can I go? How far can I travel? How much is enough but not too much? I don't know. Try eating tonight at the Super Bowl party. Just so those that want to know, I have smoked ribbed meat with the queso mixed in. So come on, we'll see how far is too much. All those are pushing the limits with no margin. That's our tendency as humans. We push the limits with no margins for error. And then when we err, we want to say, how did this happen to me? I don't know, maybe it's a bunch of decisions you had up to this point. That's why it happened to you. It didn't happen to you, you chose it. In this video clip, Dawson asked the question, how do I protect myself, instead of asking, how do I protect Willie? I actually had to go back and watch the movie. It's been so long since I've seen it. And there's some other points in that video where there was a lot of indicators that at some point he was going to make a wrong decision. There was a point in his life where he made the right decision. He was with Private Bell, who had been confined to the quarters for 7 days with nothing but water. And Dawson asked himself, what's the right thing to do? Here's a man who's starving. And so he snuck some food to him, and he got caught. And it ended up costing him a stripe. So when it came time for this order, they knew exactly who to go to, because they knew that Dawson would not make that same mistake twice. So they went to Dawson and said, if you haven't seen it, it's code red. You're going to make this guy come into line, however possible. The guy ended up dying. And the whole time through this, Dawson thinks he's innocent, thinks he's innocent. I'm just following orders. I'm just following orders. I'm just following orders. I'm just if it's an illegal order, stop following it. But there was a series of small decisions that he had made along the way that set him up for this failure. And when he was convicted, the first thing that he thought of was, this is what I deserve. Because I'm here to fight for the innocent, and I should have fought for Willie. You see, if you're asking the wrong question, how do I protect myself? What's in this for me? If that's the wrong question, if that's the question you're asking, you're going to have a lifetime of regrets. This morning, we're going to look at how Paul addresses this issue with the church in Corinth. And if you're not familiar with Corinth, think Vegas, only worse. What goes in Vegas? Yeah, none of you been there. You know better. Stays in Vegas is what they say. But what goes in Corinth goes in the book. And we read about it 2,000 years later. I'm telling you, what goes in Vegas doesn't stay in Vegas. It will catch up with you at some time. It was the Mardi Gras of its time, except Mardi Gras wasn't a week. It was a year at a time. It was this cesspool that people lived in, that this church, this fledgling church, was coming up in. And Paul is writing to them to address this issue of the questions that they're asked. And we see this principle in Corinthians chapter 6, verse 12. He says, and this is my paraphrase, you say, I am allowed to do anything, but not everything is good for you. You say, I am allowed to do anything, but some things will enslave you. You with me? You can do anything you want. We have free will. We can go to church, not go to church. We can go to work, not go to work. We can drink, we can not drink. We can do everything. We have that ability. But we also need to understand that certain things that we choose will come with certain circumstances that we need to accept. And then we decide, if I'm going to accept those circumstances, am I willing to do that? Paul hones in on this fundamental flaw in their decision-making process. They were asking the wrong question. It's not that it's a bad question. Am I allowed to do this? That's not a bad question. Am I allowed to do this legally? Is there a law against this? It's not very bright to look at an officer and say, how fast can I go? Because what if I ask that law officer and he lives in my neighborhood, what's he going to look for me? What kind of car do you drive? What's your license plate? I'm going to be sitting outside your house with a radar gun because I'm going to catch you going 11 and I'm going to give you a ticket. Right? You follow me? It's not that it's a bad question. Am I allowed to do it legally? Am I allowed to do it morally? Is there a moral code against this? Does culture say this? Here's the crazy thing about culture. If you don't do certain things, they'll say you're a prude. If you do certain things and get into trouble, they'll say you're stupid, right? Ladies, don't throw things at me. They'll look at a lady that's holding herself for her husband, and they'll say, you're a prude. And they'll look at the girl that gets pregnant, and they'll say, you're a slut. Do we really want to base our decisions on a moral code like that? But that's the questions we ask. Not a bad question, but is there anything morally wrong against it? Am I allowed to do it relationally? Did my parents tell me I can't? Most of the time we do if they told us we can't. Does my spouse want me to do this? You better listen to this one, men. Does my company have a policy against it? We have a policy here that says we don't meet alone in a room with somebody of the opposite sex unless somebody's in the building and there's a window in the room. But do I really need that policy to make that standard in my own life? Is that really the question that I should be asking? Would it be fair to say that most of the decisions in life we make that we later regret were ones not that broke any laws or any company policies? They were just little decisions along the way that led to a bigger regret down the road. Here's one for you. We get this all the time. Am I allowed to do it biblically? Is there a verse against this? No, John, there's no verse that says you can't date Becky. Becky, there's no verse that says you can't date John. But is it the right thing for you? Is that the right question? I'll give you one personal one. There's no verse in the Bible that says, Chris, don't pick up stray women on the side of the road. These are true stories. Man, I wish there was a verse that said, don't pick up stray women on the side of the road. In my earlier days, still in this state, I was going to church one day, and a lady was standing on the right side of the road, looked like she needed a ride. So I pulled over, and I said, do you need a ride? She said, sure. She got in the car. I said, where are you going? She didn't say anything. I said, where are you going? She didn't say anything. I said, I'm going to church. She said, let me out. I immediately go to church and tell my wife, hey, I picked up this girl. This is what happened. She says, you picked up a hooker. Nah, I didn't pick up a hooker. She says, no, you picked up a hooker. You would think I would learn, right? You would think I would have wrote a verse in the Bible that says, Chris, don't pick up stray women on the side of the road by yourself. Nope. I go to the store not a couple of weeks after this. I go to the store. It's just right there by the house. I walk in. There's a lady with groceries standing there. I walk out. She's still standing there. I say, hey, do you need a ride? She says, sure. So she got in my car. We drove up the street. I said, where do you want to go? She says, over here. She got up there. She goes, I want to go over here. I said, no, you're going to get out right here because now the wheels are running. My wife wouldn't want me to do this. Get out of my car. Right? I wasn't rude about it. I went to the nearest McDonald's, put her out of the car. You know, if there was a verse that said, Chris, don't pick up stray women on the side of the road by yourself, I might have obeyed that. Look, I'm not saying the legal question, the biblical question, they're bad questions, but those are obvious questions, aren't they? Most of us know when we're asking those questions, we know deep down the answer to that question. We know deep down that we shouldn't be doing this. We're only asking the question to give ourselves license to do it. And here's the thing. All of those questions come with the assumption that if I'm allowed to do it, it can't be a bad decision. If there's nothing legally wrong, or if there's nothing morally wrong, if there's nothing biblically wrong, if there's nothing relationally wrong, then it's an okay decision. We're looking for an excuse. Just because it's allowed doesn't mean you should. Do you realize some things are addicting? Shouldn't do those. Some things leave you in debt that will take you years to pay off. Just because you can make the payment, should you make the payment? Should you make the purchase? Some things leave you with emotional wounds that are hard to overcome. That's a tough one. Emotional wounds will be there for a long time. Some things leave you empty and void or frustrated and angry. Just because it's allowed doesn't mean you should. Paul's writing to this church in Corinth about these questions. Am I allowed to do this? Yeah, you're allowed to do this. Probably not the right thing. Can I? Is it okay if I do this? Yeah, but some things are addicting. And we can apply that all across our... Nothing's new under the sun. Literally. We find this from Proverbs throughout the New Testament, this question that we want to address today. Paul goes on in chapter 6 through 10 to give them some instructions in Corinth. We want to actually look back in Ephesians chapter 5, verses 15 to 17. He's very more succinct at what this question that we should be asking, this best question. And just so you know, this comes from a book by Andy Stanley, The Best Question Ever. But it's just so prominent in what we need to do on a daily basis. But Ephesians chapter 5, verse 15, be very careful how you live. Couldn't we just stop right there? I mean, honestly, shouldn't we be careful how we live? It's just so, I don't know, it just makes sense. I went to a conference one time, and this guy was speaking, and he made a bunch of comments, but one comment really stuck with me. He says, and he's a very smart gentleman. He just really, really understanding this world. He says, I don't read a lot of books. And I'm thinking, you're a smart person. Books are good. He says, I read a lot of titles. Huh? He says, take for example, boundaries. What's the first thing that comes to your mind when you read the title boundaries? Well, I probably need some. So why do you need to read a book? Just go through your life and create boundaries. Right? Parenting. I don't have kids. I don't need to read that book. You going to have kids someday? Parenting. Maybe I ought to come up with some ways to parent my kids. Maybe I do need to read a book. But anyway, you know, it's just the idea is when you look at this, be very careful how you live. We should be able to stop right there, but we can't because of the way that we live. Not as unwise, but as wise. Making the most of every opportunity because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the Lord's will is. I find it very interesting that Paul addresses this issue of evil some 2,000 years ago. He says the world is very evil. It was almost like he had prophetic utterance and he looked into our world 2,000 years later and he said, hey, be careful how you live. Live as wise, not unwise, because the world that you live in is pure evil. How many watch the news this morning? I don't watch the news. You want to know why I don't watch the news? Because it's depressing. You know why I don't watch the news? Because it's the same thing, day in and day out. You know what it talks about? Here's what it talks about. Somebody was shot. Somebody was raped. Somebody charged with a crime. We live in evil times. When you look at the statistics of failed marriages, teen sexual activity, child abuse, suicide rates, crime rates, the number of criminals running wild and so on, we don't want to be a part of those statistics, do we? But here's the reality of where we live. The people that are setting the bar for those statistics are so deep in the cesspool, they can't even understand what they're doing. Let me just give you an example. How many of you know that pornography is not art? Just by show of hands, pornography is not art. Would you say pornography is not art? Then why in our public schools do they say pornography is art and put it in our school libraries? Now you think I'm joking, but I'm dead serious. The standard for pornography has sunk so low that we call it art and we put it in the hands of our elementary school kids. And then we wonder why we have teenage pregnancies. We wonder why we have homes without fathers. We wonder why we have all these single mothers. We wonder why we have all these problems in this world. Because the cesspool and the people that are setting the bar are so low, we should be so far away from it that we never even get close to it. And yet we ask, well, how far to the line can I go? And that's how this stuff ends up in our schools and in our homes and in everywhere else. You know the things. What is it that you struggle with? Back away from it. Don't even get close to it. Here's the reality. God has not called us to live at a level of what is permissible. God never called us to that level. God has never called us to the level of asking what is legal. God has never called us to live at the level of what is culturally normal. Asking how close can I get to the immorality without crossing the line? How close can I get to sin without sinning? How fast can I go without getting a ticket? Those are all not the way that God has invited us to live. That's the way the world wants us to live. But God is not about that. So the question that we need to ask is found in that verse, what is the wise thing for me to do? What is it that I can do? You know what's wise for you and what's wise for me might be different. But they might be both permissible and allowable, but what's wise for you and what's wise for me could be totally different. Let me just give you an example from my own life. My mom, basically a single mom, I had a stepfather, but she didn't work. She stayed home. She tried to work a couple of times, didn't work out. My stepfather could care less about us, so everything that my mom bought us had to go on a credit card. Everything. A lot of times, groceries went on a credit card. You know what I learned growing up? Use a credit card. You know what's wise for you? Might be to have a credit card because you have good financial abilities. You know what's wise for me? Stay away from credit cards. You know why? Because I run them up. You know why I run them up? Because I'm predisposed to that. There's something about my past. There's something about how I live that doesn't allow me that. So what's wise for you and what's wise for me may not be the same. We're called to a different standard. A level of wisdom not only ensures better decision-making, but it also sets up to have a margin we need to avoid the things that we regret. I can remember early in my life, early in our marriage financially, we would always ask this question financially. Can we afford the payment? Man, that's the wrong question to ask. Why is that the wrong question to ask? Because you can afford this payment, and then 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 you miss a payment, and you can't afford any of them. You with me? Was getting a credit card or getting credit bad? No. But getting credit after credit after credit after credit after credit was bad. And then we asked this question, how did this happen to me? Didn't happen to you. You chose it. You just chose it succinctly a little bit along the way. If you think back through the biggest regrets that in your life, they were produced by a series of unwise decisions. And so you have to go back, and this is based on this question. Based on my past experience, what's the wise thing for me to do? Based on your past experience, what's the wise thing for you to do? Why? Because you're predisposed to what other people might not do. If you grew up in an alcoholic home, what are you predisposed to do? Drink alcohol. If you were predisposed, grew up in a life that screamed and hollered all the time, what are you predisposed to do? Scream and holler all the time. If you were grew up in a household that did whatever, you're predisposed to that. You're already so far down the line. I'll finish this in a minute, but I'll just give you a little bit of me. I didn't grow up in an alcoholic home. There was no alcohol in my home that I grew up in. But I am predisposed to alcohol because my father's an alcoholic. His father's an alcoholic, and his father's an alcoholic. So I got three, I'm the fourth generation. Three of the four generations are predisposed to alcoholism. What do you think I'm predisposed, even though I was never around it? I can drink like a fish and walk like a duck. You don't think so? Ask my wife. You know what happened a few years ago? Actually, a long time ago now. I quit drinking. Why? Because I didn't want to be predisposed to that anymore. 2 years or 3 years into our marriage, I told her, I said, I'm done. Not taking another drink. And I didn't. Not another drink. Now, we'll get back to that later. Maybe there's a long history of family reunions ending up with you and your wife getting in an argument because of how things go when you're around your family. Anybody like that? Move 1,000 miles away. That's what we did. Maybe you come from a dysfunctional environment. My anger ran deep in my family, so the wise thing for me to do is go get help. I never went and got help. Got help now. What's your history of finances, relationship, mental stability, physical fitness? All of those things that are in your past predispose you to choices in the future, today and in the future. And so you have to ask the question, based on your past experience, what's the wise thing for you to do? And your choice and my choice might be totally different. If you literally are an alcoholic, you probably don't want to go to a bar. If you are a drug addict, you probably don't want to go to the corner where you always bought your drugs. If you're a womanizer, you probably don't want to be in a room with another woman by yourself. You just look at your past and you figure out what you fall to and you set boundaries so you don't put yourself in those positions. Stop asking how this happened to you. It happened because you made the choice, literally. And then based on your current situation, what's the wise thing for you? Situations change. Current situations change. There was a time when me and Kelly had no kids. And then poof, one day we had a son. I'm like, where'd you come from? And then poof, another day we had a daughter. And I'm like, if she came first, you wouldn't be here. That's for sure. But you have these stages. Ask her. She'll tell you. She's right back there. There's these stages in life. And I tell Ashley this all the time lovingly. I love my daughter. She is straightforward, hard-headed. I'm going to get it done, but she's a realist too. So love you, Ashley. Love you, Brian. But, you have these stages of life. No kids, kids, grandkids. You have to understand in the stage of life that you're in what you should choose. If you got little kids, if you got kids under the age of 5, you probably shouldn't be working on your handicap and your golf game. It's not going to help your marriage much. It's definitely not going to help your relationship with your kids much. If you've got kids in the house at all, you probably shouldn't have a man cave, a she shed, or a gaming room. Yes, I said that. I love my family enough, I want to be around them and not around something else. I have hobbies, and I'll go out in my garage and I'll do stuff when it's clean. But the majority of my time is spent with my wife and my granddaughters and my kids. That's what I want to be. That's going to set me up for success. I don't want to be by myself somewhere in this place. Right now, if you're doing the Dave Ramsey plan, paying off your credit cards, is it going to go well with you for you if you go to the mall? Or if you go window shop for the cars? Or if you go drive down the street with nothing else to do? What happens when we don't have anything to do? We usually spend money or get in trouble, right? And so if you're on the Dave Ramsey plan, then stay on the Dave Ramsey plan. Perhaps you've come off a divorce or a bad break in a relationship. Is right now the right time to jump back into the dating scene? You know, rebound relationships fail. You know why they fail? Because they're rebound relationships. Now, I'm not saying if you've been separated for 2 years or 3 years or whatever, there's that time. You know what they say? Anytime something happens in your life, like a death in the family, a breakup in a relationship, or any significant event in a relationship, you know what they say? Don't change anything for a year. You know why they say don't change anything for a year? So you don't make stupid decisions. It's reality. Talk to somebody that's been down there, down that path and made that decision. They'll tell you don't make a decision, don't make any changes in the first year. Here's one we all understand. Somebody made you mad. What's the first thing we do? I'm going to get even with you. Don't hit send. Why? Because decisions made in an emotional event will lead to a regret down the road. Ask yourself the question, in my current situation, in my state of mind, where I'm at right now, what's the wise thing for me to do? Throw that phone or that computer as far away from you as you can so you don't regret what you're about to do. And then finally, based on your future hopes and dreams, what's the wise thing for you to do? You will end up where life takes you, or you can end up somewhere on purpose. How many of you know that you never drift where you want to go? Anybody ever been down a river in a boat? You know, just drifting, no motor, no nothing, just drifting, you know, just lazily going down the river, maybe trying to fish. If you don't guide that boat, where does it end up when you're trying to fish? In a bank, in a tree, in the weeds. You never drift where you want to go. You can take that boat in that same river in a paddle and just barely turn that paddle here and there and guide that boat right down the center or right down the bank or wherever it is you want to go to catch fish. But you have to guide that boat. You'll never drift where you want to go. God desires you to make the most of every opportunity. If you have breath in your lungs right now, that's an opportunity to make a different choice in your life. If you got up this morning, you have an opportunity today, all day long, to make better choices. If you get up tomorrow, you have an opportunity. Every day is an opportunity with God to do something different. Why should we be intentional about it? Because the days are evil. This world will guide you and drift you where you have no intentions of going. And one day you'll wake up and go, how did this happen to me? And I can go back in your life and I can walk you down every single decision you made. A few years ago, back during the middle of COVID, I'm way off of this one. Back during COVID, I told the staff that, hey, buckle up because we're about to have a whole lot of marital counseling. We're putting two people that don't do anything together in life on a general basis in the same household for 2 weeks till they flatten the curve. You'll get that. We got calls from all kinds of people. I got a call from one couple they didn't go here. They had no clue who they were. I didn't know them, so I do the research. You know how I do the research? Facebook. So I pulled both their names up on Facebook, and lo and behold, 6 months ago, their lives changed. I don't know what happened. Still don't know what happened because they wouldn't tell me. 6 months ago, they both stopped posting about each other. You could go a year prior to that, and there would be post after post of, ooh, I love you, and ooh, this, and ooh, that, and just all about each other. 6 months ago, something happened, and their life changed forever. So I don't have time to play with you on a Zoom. I just I don't know you. We're going to get right to we introduced each other, and I said, what happened 6 months ago? And they were like, what? I was like, 6 months ago, something happened. Let's just cut to the chase. What happened? Why do you say that? I said, because your Facebook, your last post about him was this, and your last post about her was this, and then all you post about now is your boats and your jet skis and nothing about her, and all you post about is your work. So what happened 6 months ago? That was the end of the conversation. The decisions you make today will determine your hopes and dreams tomorrow. So how you decide to live today makes all the difference in the world. So I got two things I'm going to finish with. I want to go back to where I left off. I decided in third year of our marriage, I was done drinking. Now I want to fast forward. I want to talk to you about how you can change your history. And I want to talk to you about how your circumstances change, your current circumstances. So that would have been around 86, 87. I quit drinking. Fast forward to 2004. I'm getting ready to retire from the military. And one day we go to, it was in June, actually June 8th of 2004. You can ask me how I know that. Actually 2003, June 8th of 2003. That was our anniversary. We go to a movie. I had a headache. I took an ibuprofen. I sat through the whole movie thinking I had popcorn stuck. I actually had an allergic reaction to the ibuprofen. Long story short, within 2 weeks, I was allergic to every over-the-counter drug there is. Ibuprofen, aspirin, Tylenol, everything. I can't. And you don't realize what's in that. You can't take a cough medicine at this point because it has one of those ingredients in it. I look like Hitch, literally. I live on Benadryl and an EpiPen, literally, these days. And so so I told Kelly, I said, I don't know what to do because I'm the alternatives, they wanted to give me narcotics. And I'm predisposed to addictions, right? It's in my DNA. I'm predisposed to this. And I'm not taking any narcotics. That's just not in my repertoire. I'm just not into it. And so I came home and I said, I don't know what to do because I get these headaches all the time. I'm under a lot of stress. And I said, here's what I want to do. And I said, you can stop me at any point, and I'll give it all in your hands. I said, I'm going to go buy a bottle of bourbon, and when I have a headache, I'm going to go take a shot of bourbon, and I'm going to go lay down. And I'm just going to give the alcohol time to relax my muscles and just do what God says it will do in the right terms. Alcohol is medicinal. And so I said, I just need some medicine that I can take. And so, and I told her, I said, if at any time I abuse this, you can walk away. You can just walk away. I just give you permission. Just walk away. And so that was 2004. Here we are in, what is this, 2024. So 20 years later, I have a house full of alcohol that I use for medicinal purposes mainly, but I do not abuse at all. You can change your past by making little decisions along the way and create a new past for you. You want to know why I don't abuse alcohol? Because I love my family. And I want to see the future generations to come. In the same sense, this mother in Proverbs chapter 31 is writing to her son who is going to be a future king. She says this in Proverbs 31. She says, Lemuel, it is not for kings. It is not for kings to drink wine nor for rulers to crave beer. It is lest they drink and forget what has been decreed and deprive all the oppressed of their rights. Let beer be for the funerals, wine for those who want to forget. Let them drink and forget their poverty and remember their misery no more. What's his mom saying? What is she saying to Lemuel? It's not about whether or not alcohol is legal. Alcohol's legal. And even the Bible, Paul tells Timothy, take a little wine for your stomach. It is medicinal. I'm not justifying my drink, because this could go with anything. Anything you choose. It's not about whether there's a verse or not a verse about drinking or not drinking, but rather you are in line to be the king someday. That's the future that awaits you. What kind of king do you want to be? You see, for me, years ago, I decided, and I didn't make all the decisions right, but I knew that I grew up in a broken home. And I knew alcohol was a major contributor to that. There's a lot more that goes into it, but the alcohol was a major contributor. And it wasn't the alcohol, it was the abuse of the alcohol. But I decided early on that I don't want that legacy. And so I set it down. And I walked away from it. And I never craved it. There are other things that I crave. I quit dipping. That craving lasted for 3 years. There are things in your life that are addictive. But if you want a better future, you have to either change what you're doing now and set a new past so that you can reach the goals and the dreams that you have, or you just have to accept the fact that you're going to get what life gives you and nothing more. And so as we wrap up this series, here's some things for you to think about. God has not called us to live at the level of what culture says is allowed, but rather to live a guided life by what is wise. If you'll dedicate yourself to getting your values in line with what God values today, if you'll dedicate to pre-setting limits and boundaries to give you the margin you need to avoid making decisions in the moment where emotions and temptations can convince us to make bad decisions, if you'll dedicate yourself to gathering a team of people around you to walk with you and help you make better decisions, and if you'll dedicate yourself to asking yourself these questions, based on my past experience, based on my present situation, and based on my future hopes and dreams, what is the wisest thing for me to do? If you do these things, you will make better decisions and experience a life of fewer regrets, perhaps even a life with not even one letter of regret. Father, we love you and we praise you. We thank you for your grace and your mercy. We thank you so much that grace covers all of our unwise decisions. But Father, could we just stop presuming upon that grace and your forgiveness and choose to make wiser decisions so that we're far away from the margins, that we're far away from the line, that when we do sin, we're nowhere near a regrettable decision. We pray this in Christ's name. Amen.